Welcome to IDD Get to Know Me Special Olympics Edition. I'm your co-host, Victor.
And I'm your co-host, Melanie.
In this edition of the podcast, we will be diving into some of the topics important to the Special Olympics community.
Before we start, let's explain what IDD means.
Great idea. IDD stands for Intellectual and or Developmental Disabilities. You will hear from us, people with IDD, and experts on specific health topics.
So today's topic is about women's health, and we will be focusing on the importance of supporting the menstrual and breast health of Special Olympics athletes. We will be hearing from six different guests. Our first segment includes Dr. Laura St. John, a researcher, Camille Williams, a project manager within the Peter Gilligan Center, and Bridget Lord, a nurse practitioner supporting the Breast Center at Women's College Hospital. Then Susan Wang, a fellow Special Olympics athlete, followed by Rachel Skanes, a director of youth and health programs at Special Olympics Nova Scotia, and last but certainly not least, Katrina LeMay Doan, a Canadian Olympic speed skater and champion network athlete. We certainly hope you do enjoy. So hello, everybody. Today, I am very excited to have Dr. Laura St. John, Camille Williams, and Bridget Lord with us. Maybe before we get started, let's start with some quick introductions and possibly an icebreaker. So please introduce yourselves, everybody, and tell us what your current favorite hobby is.
I guess I can start, and then maybe I'll hot potato it to the next person. But yes, thanks for introducing me, Melanie. My name's Laura St. John. I work at the University of Calgary in Calgary, Alberta, and I work on looking at the health and well-being of women and girls with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And I've been in my position now for just over a year and been really enjoying it. And I guess my favorite hobbies when I just started after the holidays, when I got some Christmas gifts, I have been getting really into coloring, just coloring pages. Yeah, I've been really enjoying that. So that is my hobby. And I guess I will hot potato it to Bridget.
Hi, everyone. As mentioned, my name is Bridget. I am a nurse practitioner, and I've worked as a nurse practitioner for about 20 years. I'm currently here in Toronto at Women's College Hospital, and I've worked primarily in the area of oncology, so with patients with breast cancer and around breast health. And if my latest hobby is, I took it up about a year ago, is ice skating. I used to do it when I was about 8, and I hadn't done it for, 40 years. So it was quite the challenge. I'm a bit like Bambi on ice, but it's always good to challenge yourself, and that's what I've started.
Okay, so I guess I'm next. Thanks for welcoming us, Melanie. My name is Camille Williams. I work at the Peter Gilligan Center for Women's Cancers at Women's College Hospital in Toronto. I started out on the research side of things, looking at implementation science, and technology-enabled healthcare. And from there, I've moved into my current role, which is more of a project management role, which I quite enjoy. I've been here for a few years now. And I work to help implement a number of projects across the range, across the continuum of cancer care. Thanks for having me. Ah, my hobby. I forgot about that piece. Interesting that you said ice skating, Bridget, because it's like on my to-do list, but I'm terrified. I did not grow up in Canada. And I always tell people the first time I tried ice skating, I broke my glasses. So it's like aspirational for me. But what my actual current hobby is, I think I finally got to a place with my 9-year-old daughter where we can like cuddle on the couch on the Saturday morning and both read books together. So I've been enjoying that.
So maybe to start off, Laura, you are doing research that focuses on the women's health of the IDD population. Could you tell us what you are finding and why talking about women's health in Special Olympics is particularly important?
Yeah, that's a great question. So last year we started, myself or my lab started looking at menstrual health, so period health in people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. Trying to understand, you know, does it look different for this population? How does it affect their overall health? And how does it affect physical activity? Being a researcher in my field, which is a lot to do with physical activity, that's what I'm always interested in. You know, how can we get people to be more physically active? And how can we get people to stay in physical activity? And I know from my own personal experiences dealing with menstrual health conditions. So I found out when I was 25 that I have endometriosis, which is a condition that affects causes me to have really painful periods and a bunch of other symptoms. I did notice for myself that when I was having my period, I was not physically active because of the pain, dealing with tampons and pads and just trying to navigate that. And I, in my own kind of research with this population, I thought, I wonder if anybody is looking at menstrual health for people with IDD. And you probably could guess there's not very much. We don't really know a lot about menstrual health in this population. And really, we don't know much about menstrual health for most women and most people who menstruate, but certainly not if you kind of think about it from an IDD perspective. So what we were interested in is looking at that. And what we were finding when we talked to people with IDD was that their period and getting their period really impacted their quality of life. So we think of quality of life of, you know, being able to go out and spend time with friends, being able to have a job, feeling good about yourself, being confident. So there's tons of things that kind of impact quality of life. But menstrual health and having a period for people with IDD, that was really making quality of life go down for that group. And what people were saying was, you know, I don't like being social when I'm on my period. Some people would talk about, you know, I lock myself in my room for those 7 days and I don't talk to anyone. I don't want to leave the house because I'm worried about bleeding. I don't want to, I struggle with hygiene during that time. So there's all these things that we were noticing that were kind of being impacted by having a period. And the other thing we were seeing was that for people who were getting a period with IDD, the symptoms they were experiencing, the physical symptoms, you know, having cramps, being bloated, having a stomach ache, or the emotional symptoms, so being angry, feeling sad, they were way worse for people with IDD than for people without. And that's kind of concerning. You know, what's going on that these symptoms are so much worse? And why are, you know, women with IDD and people who menstruate with IDD, why are they not, you know, finding out about their menstrual health? Why are they not exploring that? So there was that piece of it. And then there was this stuff around, you know, I don't want to talk to my doctor about it. You know, I've had bad experiences with my doctor. I don't want to talk to them about it. Or I didn't know I could talk to my doctor about it. So that was a huge thing, that a big barrier that was coming up, you know, or I have a male doctor and I'm not comfortable talking to them about it. And what ends up happening is people have really bad period symptoms, but they never get dealt with. And so we see this, you know, every month, their quality of life really goes away or gets a lot worse when their period comes. And then the piece that became very interesting to me was when I would talk to Special Olympics athletes. And a lot of the Special Olympics athletes would say, you know, when I know I'm getting my period, I don't go to Special Olympics. I won't go to practice during those days. Or for swimmers, they would say, yeah, I don't go and swim on those days because I'm worried about bleeding. And that's a big thing, right? Depending on how long someone's period is, that's, you know, potentially seven, some participants said 10 days where they weren't physically active. And we know how important being physically active is for your physical health, but also your mental and emotional health. So having those big chunks of time where you don't feel like you can be physically active is a huge concern. And then something else that the athletes brought up was, you know, sometimes the uniforms that they're given are maybe not super flattering, or they're white uniforms. And that's a huge barrier for them. I don't want to go in my uniform when I have my period, which is completely understandable. There's, you know, issues with bleeding. And then, you know, again, athletes feeling like they can't talk to coaches about it because maybe they have a male coach, or feeling like, you know, when I have my period, I don't say anything to my teammates, even when I'm not feeling good, because there's men around and I don't want them hearing about that kind of stuff. And so, yeah, we were just noticing that it definitely was having a big impact on all these areas of women with IDD's lives.
But I also hear what you're saying about the challenges that female athletes can have with bras, because since I'm a strong butterflyer, you know, I think more often than not, female athletes might have more broader shoulders than the average female out there. So bras can be particularly challenging for females. And my mom keeps adjusting my bras constantly because they're always slipping and falling. But I think there's only a limit as what you can wear out there. I also, as an athlete, appreciate the sizing issues female athletes can have. I've had the opportunity and honor to compete at many games, regardless of regional, provincials. I've gone to one national, so I understand the challenges that can present themselves when it comes to sizing and fitting your uniform. Not an easy task.
Yeah, it's a good point that you brought up, because another thing that athletes talked about was bra fitting. And actually quite a few of them were surprised when I said, well, sometimes if you have a bigger chest, you can put your sports bra under your bathing suit, wear your bathing suit on top, and that can be a way. And oh, really? I didn't think you could do that. And I thought, again, that's really important information that might be helpful for some people. But yeah.
So then, Bridget, as a nurse practitioner, how do you think ignoring or even not addressing women's health concerns can impact athletes' sports performance and their health overall?
Thanks, Melanie. That's a really important question. I think there's several aspects to that. You know, if symptoms are ignored, or if women's health is not addressed, it can affect athletes and women in a variety of different ways. So I think performance is one. I think, you know, if people are anxious or worrying about their symptoms and what's going on, it may be harder for them to focus on performing the sport that they love so much and competing. So if they're distracted and worrying about, you know, what's going on, what, you know, if I have a lump at my breast, is it something I need to worry about? And not having those answers can be really distracting, and it, you know, it can cause a lot of anxiety. The other thing is, and Laura sort of touched on this, you know, people can have a lot of pain and discomfort if you don't have a good fitting bra from a breast perspective. And you mentioned this too, Melanie, you know, it can rub, you can get rashes, you can get areas that open up that put you increased risk of infection and things like that. It can be restricting. You can have just breast pain because, you know, people with larger breasts, if they're not well supported, it can cause discomfort. So I think those are important things from a performance perspective, and for all women, but especially for athletes. The other thing is, in not addressing or ignoring some of these women's health issues, or as well as symptoms, can cause a delay in diagnosis. And when we're looking at a breast health perspective, there are certain things that you really should not ignore. And I always tell patients that I see, you know, I would rather see you 10 times and have it be nothing than for you not to come in that one time and have it being something that we could have caught really early. So the things that I teach my patients, you know, to look for are lumps, you know, breast lumps or lumps in the axilla under the arm, redness in the breast, new redness that's not going away, dimpling. So when we mean dimpling, it's kind of like when the skin kind of pulls in a bit, or if you lift your arms above your head and you notice there's a bit of the skin that's not smooth like the rest of the breast. And, it, you know, it's really important to look what's new for you. Right? We talk about being breast aware. The other things to look for would be nipple changes. So if there's liquid coming from the nipple that's new, if the nipple starts to pull in a bit, that's new. Some people have flat nipples or nipples that are normally pulled in, and we call retracted. And if that's your normal, that's your normal, you know, but if it's something new, that's what we need to know about. If there's crusting on the nipple, or dry skin that's kind of new in the nipple area, and also pain that doesn't go away. Most things, the thing we're trying to pick up early is something like a breast cancer, a small breast cancer. So when we think about women's health and things that we ignore, most breast cancers aren't associated with pain, which is sometimes a good thing and a bad thing, because if it were, it would raise kind of alarm bells and we go, oh, something's going on. And sometimes people think that if there's no pain, they're not having pain, they can't possibly have breast cancer, which is not true. So most breast cancers don't have pain, but if you do have a new pain that's not going away, it's important to get it looked at. Okay, so those are sort of the messaging. So, you know, what I think, you know, ignoring symptoms, ignoring new findings can really impact your health overall. You know, from a athlete's perspective and from a woman's perspective, just from an overall health. So those are some of the things that I think about when we don't address those things.
And now, Camille, while your work may not focus exactly on the IDD population, how do you think education and screening of women's health concerns can be adapted to support Special Olympic athletes?
Thanks for that question, Melanie. It's a great one. So first, I'd like to zoom out a bit and say at the Peter Gilgan Center, one of our goals is to identify and target various subgroups that we consider to be underserved in the along the continuum of cancer care. So this could be various groups, you know, defined by things like race or ethnicity or language. And when we, you know, we looked at the literature, we saw that folks with IDD are one of those groups where they're not well served along the cancer care continuum. And you mentioned education and screening. And so the literature suggests that, you know, knowledge and awareness about cancer, what symptoms are, what the risks are, and access to screening and ability to participate in screening for various cancers are two big factors that affect the health of women with IDD when it comes to cancer care. So how can these things be adapted? Our approach is always to first try to work with members of the community themselves, so or working with organizations who work with those members of those communities. So for example, you know, we reached out to Special Olympics Ontario when we wanted to see how we could contribute to education and screening for women with IDD. I think it's always so important to get in touch with the folks you're actually trying to serve to ensure that the things that you're identifying as problems or the things that the research suggests are the issues, that those are actually the issues. And then to ensure that whatever potential solutions you're trying to implement will actually address those issues, right? Because the research can find one thing, but that may not apply across the board, or there may be certain nuances that don't quite come through in the research. So actually having conversations with women with IDD or with organizations that regularly work with people with IDD, I think is a really important point. And then I think another important aspect of this is not only focusing on the patients or the women themselves, but expanding that sort of circle to those who support women and patients with IDD. So their families, their caregivers, and also their healthcare providers, right? Because we know that we want folks to go in to see their healthcare providers when they identify an issue or they're having symptoms, but we also want to make sure that those healthcare providers are well equipped to have meaningful conversations with those women when they come in, who they're able to make them feel welcome and understood and, you know, for example, to speak with the patients themselves and not just their support people, right? So there's also educating and working with the healthcare providers and all the other people in the patient's circle of care to ensure that we're supporting these people as best as we can. So that's kind of how we approach adapting anything, whether it's educational materials or providing cancer screening. It's really making sure that we're centering the voices and the perspectives of the group that we're trying to serve. So in this case, women with IDD, and making sure that, and that helps us to ensure that whatever solutions we're coming up with, we're working with them to check in. Okay, does this make sense? Do you think this will work? How could we improve this to ensure that it's actually doing what we hope it will do?
Thank you very much for sharing that. I have a great passion for the medical world, and I'm grateful for the work that's already being done out there. And I'm very glad to see that everybody working in the medical field always wants to keep improving and doing what they can to help service or help serve the IDD population better. So now these next two questions will actually be for everybody. So to start, what resources do you think can be offered to help athletes be better prepared to manage their breast and menstrual health?
I will start with some initial ideas. I think one important thing to consider is that it's probably best to offer resources in a variety of different ways. You know, some people might prefer something to read, some people may prefer listening to something, some people may prefer a video. So I think when we think about resources, it's important to have a variety of resources so that folks can access the same information in a way that works best for them. So I'll say, you know, we worked with H-Card at CAMH, as well as Special Olympics, and, you know, self-advocates like you, Melanie, to develop a little pamphlet called Be Breast Aware with some tips for, you know, caring for our breasts. And as I mentioned before, it was really important for us to work with folks who work with people with IDD on a regular basis and to hear from self-advocates to ensure that that pamphlet was useful, you know, for the folks we were designing it for.
I think the other thing that is really important, I mean, I think for athletes with IDD to, you know, it's not always easy, but to do try and establish a relationship with their healthcare provider, even if it's just regular checkups, but to let them know, you know, what's going on. And so that, you know, when they do need to come in and talk about things that they may be a little bit shy about or not feel entirely comfortable, that that relationship already exists and they feel more comfortable with the people they're talking to. I think we also, you know, in order, it's also helpful to provide resources to coaches and the families that of these women with IDD so that everybody's on the same page in working together to improve women's health. So Laura, I'll let you go if you have more to add.
Yeah, no, I think, you both covered, I think, just about everything I would have said. I agree. Yeah, so having resources that are co-developed alongside people with IDD and Special Olympics athletes to make sure that any type of resources or tools that are being developed are suited for that population. And then I completely agree that bringing on board caregivers and coaches and kind of creating more shared language around things so that there's a bit more consistency because everybody's approach to these things and how they speak about them is different. And so I think having a little bit of consistency amongst everyone is probably going to be super helpful. And yeah, definitely having multiple ways of accessing the information. The one that kind of came up a few times with participants in our studies was the use of social stories, especially when it came to going to the doctor, going somewhere and having procedures done related to menstrual or breast health. So having a social story about, you know, going to get a mammogram done, or having a social story about getting an IUD, or those types of things that we don't really have any of those available right now. So that is something that was brought up.
And what do you all think are important pieces of information for women in the Special Olympics community to know about taking care of their breast and menstrual health?
Maybe I'll start this time, then we'll go back around. So I think I will speak to menstrual health, and I'll let Bridget and Camille speak on breast health, and because I'm not well informed in that area. But I would say in regards to menstrual health, athletes understanding that a little bit of pain is normal, but severe, debilitating, I can't get out of bed pain is something to make a note of and is something that you should be talking to your doctor about. So that kind of leads into the second piece of knowing that you can go to your doctor if you are worried about your period, or you are having a lot of cramping or heavy bleeding, or if something changes with your period, which can happen, that you should be connecting with your doctor about that. And my third piece would be around menstrual health and period health management. I think for a very long time, the way we thought we could deal with the bleeding was you either have pads or tampons, and if one of those doesn't work, you're kind of out of luck. But there's so many great products that exist now, and the one that has, I think, helped a lot of people is period underwear, because it's something that you just pull on and you don't have to worry about it. And there's lots of companies that have more accessible in terms of pricing and things like that. So I would say those are my three. So knowing that a little bit of pain is fine, but not too much pain, being able to talk to your doctor and looking at different hygiene products.
So from a breast health perspective, we worked to develop a pamphlet that Camille talked about. And one of the strategies that we came up with was what we call the SOFT or SOFT acronym. So S was select a bra that fits. And so there are stores that will do bra fittings. You can do it at home as well. And it's important to remember, even with sports bras for athletes, that eventually they do wear down a bit and they do need to be replaced. So, you know, find a bra that fits. That's the S. O, so observe and see any changes. And I think I talked a little bit about some of those symptoms before. So lump, redness, dimpling, nipple changes, and pain that doesn't go away. So know your own body. A lot of people will check, you know, in the shower or when they're putting on deodorant, but you know your body best. And if something changes, you're the one who's going to probably know that first. And then the F was feel for anything abnormal. So again, that just leads to being breast aware and that you know your body best. And then the last one, T, so it was to tell someone. So whether it's a family member, a parent, a sibling, a healthcare provider, a nurse, a doctor, your coach, a close friend, somebody who's going, you know, if you're not comfortable going straight to your doctor, talk to somebody and see what suggestions they have. And you know, I think it's important to tell somebody about what's going on so that you can get the help that's needed. So from a breast perspective, I think that would be there. And the last one I mentioned before, we would rather see you 10 times and have it be nothing than for you not to come in that one time.
Great suggestions from both Laura and Bridget. The only thing I would add is to kind of do our best to let go of the shame around some of these topics, right? It can be a little bit awkward. It can be difficult to talk about. But, you know, at the end of the day, there's nothing inherently shameful about menstruation or having breasts. You know, they're sort of normal parts of they're just parts of our bodies, right? Like it's healthy to menstruate. So as difficult and as awkward as it can be, let's do our best to kind of have these conversations more regularly so that it gets a little bit less awkward every time, and ensure that we're not reinforcing any of the sort of shame that can sometimes come along with talking about these topics.
If I could add one last thing, sorry. I know we're almost out for time perspective, but also if you're talking with your primary care provider, so a nurse practitioner and doctor, it's important to mention your family history. So it's good to talk to your parents, if possible, or siblings about your family history of different diseases, but especially cancer, because that will help you understand your risk of developing something. So that's important to look at your dad's side as well as your mom's side if that's possible. So last point from that perspective, it's good to know your family history.
For sure. And if I can just add one tiny little thing to what Camille was just saying, talking about menstrual subjects or about breast health, like breast health or menstrual health in women can be very touchy-feely and very anxiety-inducing. And when I go through any medical appointments, regardless if it's just with my GP or whatever medical appointment I might have, I make sure to get my health professional or the healthcare provider to tell me what they're doing as they're doing it, because then that way that helps relieve the anxiety a little bit.
That's a great point, Melanie. Yeah, I think a lot of people would benefit from that, not just those with IDD too. So I do hope, I hope that would become a more common practice among all healthcare professionals to offer it to everyone. You know, would you like me to walk you through the steps of what's going on? I think that would be so helpful.
Anyways, I really want to take this moment to thank you all so much for sharing your valuable insights today. We've definitely learned a lot from you all through your different perspectives. So thank you all very much for your time today. Thank you very, very much.
Thanks for having me, Melanie. It was wonderful to speak with all of you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Melanie. Thank you for having us here.
I am very excited to have Susan Wang, a fellow Special Olympic athlete, here with us today.
Hi, thank you so much for having me today.
It's our pleasure. Maybe we can start off with some quick introductions and a bit of an icebreaker. Susan, please introduce yourself and tell us what your favorite TV show is right now.
Hi everyone, my name is Susan Wong. I'm from Vancouver, BC, and I think my favorite TV show would be Full House.
I love Full House a lot.
It's such a good show.
So, Susan, can you maybe tell us why is talking about women's health and more specifically breast and menstrual health important to you as a Special Olympic athlete, or in this case, as a fellow Special Olympic athlete?
I think talking about women's health is really important in sports because I feel like it's so underappreciated, and women need to take care of their physical health as well as mental health to be able to succeed in sport.
I agree. I know we often talk about men's health in any sports environment, really. But yes, I agree with what you're saying about the women's health being underappreciated. So that's an opinion I really respect. So then, maybe what are some steps you take to maintain or ensure your best athletic performance when you start or get close to your menstrual cycle?
I like to take breaks here and there, and I get really bad cramps when it comes to my menstrual cycle. So I always try to manage that in different ways by taking breaks and just training a lot.
Yes, yeah. And I obviously can't speak for you here. I can only speak for myself. I have to say that when I have my period or I'm in a menstrual cycle, that I can have mood swings, or be very irritating or very irritated, which I think is common for women. So
Definitely. Yeah, me too. Sometimes I just get frustrated for no reason, and I don't know why.
how do you manage your breast or menstrual health when preparing for practice or any sporting events then?
Ooh, I try to have a good fitting sports bra because that's so important. Sometimes when I'm running for track and field, sometimes I forget to get a sports bra and just my breasts just go up and down and it just feels really uncomfortable. So I just try to have a good fitting sports bra and also bringing lots of pads to practice.
I can hear you about the breast and the bra situation or the bra sizing. Again, I can't speak for you. I can only speak for myself here. I am a pretty busty girl myself, so yeah, the importance of a well-fitting bra is crucial, if not vital. I know we're all different shapes and sizes in the Special Olympics here, and we're all there to support each other, obviously. But yes, you always want to make sure that you have a proper fitting bra, and when you have an athletic body, that can be sometimes challenging, to say the very least, and I know this from lived experience.
For sure. So important.
As a fellow Special Olympic athlete, I'm sure you've possibly had the opportunity to travel to many different competitions and or may have also participated in the Healthy Athletes Initiative along the way. Have you ever needed any guidance or support for managing your breast and or menstrual health? And if that was the case, what did that look like for you specifically?
Yes, since I travel a lot, I just try to get prepared, even if it's like I know my menstrual cycle won't come for a really long time. I still bring it just in case, because sometimes it is irregular, it just comes early or when it wants to. So I just try to manage it by myself. I haven't really had any help managing the process and the menstrual cycle.
Well then, as we wrap up, I would absolutely love to hear your advice for our listeners, and maybe what is one piece of advice you would give to any fellow athletes, possibly coaches or family caregivers, to help support the healthy, to help support the healthy, the health of women Special Olympics athlete.
Ooh, yes, of course. I would love to give advice. I think it's important to not be afraid to take breaks. If you really need a break, you can advocate for yourself and tell your coach that you really need a break. Or if you just want some time by yourself, don't be afraid to tell your coach or your teammates that you just want to be by yourself. To just have some alone time. And then when you're feeling better, you could go back to your team.
Well, thank you so very much, Susan, for taking the time to share your valuable thoughts and insight today. I'm sure we've all learned a lot from you as a Special Olympic athlete. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me today. And it was amazing talking to you.
I am excited to have Rachel Skanes, a director of youth and health programs at Special Olympics Nova Scotia, here today with us to talk about women's health. Maybe before we get going, we'll start with just a few quick introductions and an icebreaker. So, Rachel, please introduce yourself and tell us what your favorite sport to watch is.
Oh, great question. So, as you said already, my name's Rachel Skanes. I'm the Director of Youth and Health with Special Olympics, Nova Scotia. I've been in the role for a couple years now. Basically, my job is to coordinate youth and health programs throughout the province of Nova Scotia. For Special Olympics Nova Scotia, I look for any kind of gaps in the healthcare system for our athletes and the greater population of those with intellectual and developmental disabilities, and try to figure out how we can remove barriers so that our athletes can be as healthy as possible. And so part of that has become women's health, which we'll talk about today. And my favorite sport to watch, I used to row competitively in high school, like rowing in the boat. I had a doubles partner, so I love watching rowing on television now because I know how hard and challenging it can be.
So before we officially get started in the actual conversation,
Yeah.
we would absolutely love to hear more about your work and what Special Olympics Nova Scotia has been doing for athletes' women's health.
Awesome. Yeah, so this has become a huge topic for us at Special Olympics Nova Scotia for me. Basically started out because we went to provincial games. I went to my first provincial games as a staff member, as the director of health, and noticed that the majority of our female athletes didn't have appropriate sports bras. And it was really impacting their athletic performance. And they were at provincials, which, as you know, Melanie, is a big competition and sometimes qualifier for our national games. So these were athletes who it's really important for them to have the right equipment. So that's kind of how it started. We also had a parent reach out to one of our healthcare team members, addressing that their child didn't have access to bra fitting services or didn't know what to look for. So that was definitely a challenge. I went to our staff and my CEO and said, this is what's come to our attention. This is what the problem is. And I think we need to do something about it. So I'm very lucky to have a really supportive staff and a really great CEO. So we decided we should be doing sports bra fittings for our athletes at the next provincial games, and Special Olympics Nova Scotia financed it for some of our priority athletes. So our first major program was our first sports bra fitting. We partnered with a sports bra fitting specialist in Nova Scotia who is fantastic, who's really, really good, who knowledgeable on this topic and has really inclusive sizing. So we knew that any athlete that came to us would be fitted with the right right equipment. So she came and we fitted 100 athletes. 52 of them received free bras and the rest received a fitting, and then they got a little pamphlet that said what bra that they were recommended and how to order it, so that if we did the program again and had more funding, then we could give them a bra for free later on. And we noticed there was a ton of really, really great results. So we noticed our athletes had a huge difference in their self-confidence. We had a lot of athletes leave. Their posture was better. They felt better about themselves. We even had an athlete say that she'd never felt so beautiful because of wearing this new bra. So not only was it, did we note that it helped their athletic performance, and it really did, and coaches also had that feedback, but the self-confidence was huge in the difference that it made. So we also noticed that half of the athletes that we fitted had rashes, really bad rashes, that was likely made worse, if not caused, by not having the appropriate sports bra wear. So you can imagine when it's really hot and you're sweating and, you know, under your breast can get, you know, hot and sweaty, and there can be some friction. So that was really causing a health concern. So we decided, with all of these results or reports that we noted, that this was something we really needed to do again and continue to offer, especially because we have so many more athletes that could benefit. We only were able to see 100 at that time, but we wanted all of our athletes to have this opportunity. So after that, we decided it needed to get even bigger, and there were still room for improvement to do more. So now we have a team, a sort of health team with Special Olympics Nova Scotia, where we're trying to develop more resources, develop more topics such as osteoporosis, which affects a lot of women, especially older women, stuff about menopause, perimenopause, to further empower our female athletes. So that's kind of how we started and where we are now, which is kind of a long answer, but we are every day trying to grow and improve in this area because we've learned what a big gap there is for everyone, but especially women with IDD in Canada and in Nova Scotia.
Well, that's okay if it's a long answer, because I find it particularly touching that you actually had an athlete come forward saying or stating how beautiful she actually felt. And being a competitive swimmer myself here, I understand the issues women can have. And so, yes, the importance of having a good fitting bra is wonderful. And
absolutely.
And of utmost importance. As a health program director, how do you help support athletes' breast and menstrual health?
So by developing really good evidence-based programs and education. So we have, like I said, we have our sports bra program, we have our women's and pelvic health program that we're developing. So we're really taking a local expert opinion and education. We're taking research and literature in the women's health disabilities field, and we're taking partnerships with people like Dr. St. John and the Aerie Real Foundation and our pelvic physiotherapists, and we have some other incredible team members that help us develop programs that are really geared toward, like we were saying, advocacy, female empowerment, and helping coaches too learn how to have some of these conversations with athletes and promote independence with them as well.
So what do you think are important aspects to create an environment where athletes feel comfortable to come to coaches or support staff with questions or concerns about their breast and menstrual health?
Excellent question. So, like we've talked about a lot so far, we try to empower our athletes with information about their bodies and what is normal and what is appropriate through our health education. So, for example, period pain is normal, but it's severe period pain that doesn't go away with Tylenol or Advil use is not normal. And that's a huge misconception for everyone. So we're trying to promote those messages so that our athletes can understand when they need to seek medical attention, when they need to inform their coach that something's not quite right. So we're trying to give our athletes the tools to be able to advocate for themselves. We're also trying to ensure that our coaches are creating safe spaces for our female athletes. So they can do this in a couple of ways, making sure that female athletes have their own washrooms, their own safe spaces where they can use the bathroom and take care of any menstruation stuff that they need to, making sure that bathroom breaks are readily available and that if a female athlete needs to go to the bathroom, then that's great, go ahead. Making sure bathrooms are clearly identified. So this survey, one of the points on there was that athletes really should be considered and consulted for any uniforms. So in that report, it talks about how uniforms with white bottoms can cause a lot of anxiety for girls and women in sport. So making sure you're consulting your athletes on anything like that. And then we need to make sure as coaches that we're mindful of our language. So I don't know about you, Melanie, but when I was in gym class in elementary school, you know, years and years, decades ago, sometimes gym teachers, boys in class would say, oh, you run like a girl, or kind of negative connotations that that don't make you feel very good as a woman in sport, or that you're not included in sports and physical activities. So we want coaches to make sure that they're not using language that can make women uncomfortable in a sports or recreation environment. Making jokes about menstruation or if an athlete comes to you saying they're not feeling well or that they need to, you know, take a break, then that is respected. And then having menstrual products on hand and available to athletes. So of course, not having the appropriate products is a huge barrier to participating in sports. So for us at our provincials, we have our medical staff make sure they have products on hand, but we're really trying to, when our athletes come through our health programs, making sure that we give them good resources that way as well. So as coaches, you can have those products in your bag, and if an athlete comes to you, you can give them whatever they need. And then we've also created a partnership with Autism Nova Scotia, who does healthy relationships education. So we're trying to develop a coach's education around healthy relationships topics that kind of tie into our women's health topics. So topics such as consent and reproductive health a little bit. So helping our coaches navigate some of those conversations would be really, really important as well.
How do you talk and approach the topic of women's health with all athletes then?
Excellent question. So as we said kind of in the beginning, it all started with, you know, our athletes need sports bras and grew from there. So when we started with our sports bra program, it really lent naturally to conversations about breast health and self-care for women and female athletes and athletes that identify as female or have breasts. So from there, it kind of turned into conversations of female empowerment and bodily autonomy. So like we've said a lot in this podcast, it's about ensuring that our athletes have the information about their bodies to make good health and lifestyle decisions and to be able to advocate for themselves. We give education about well-fitting sports bras and what that can do for athletic performance and self-confidence, something that I think a lot of research on women's health is lacking right now. We talk a lot about the menstrual cycle, but we don't talk a lot about sports bras and its impact on athletic performance and self-confidence in the IDD community, but also for women's sport in general. So definitely we have conversations about that. We have an excellent team that's helping us develop resources and education. And then we use a lot of feedback from our athletes and our coaches to continue to change our program to meet the needs of our athletes. So that's a big one. And then we try to meet our athletes where they're at, so wherever they're comfortable. When we have health programs, if our athlete comes to us, we make sure to determine, are you comfortable having a conversation in this area? Because not everyone is, and that's okay. So we talk about that in the menstruation area, but then we also talk about that for our sports bra program. So some athletes come to us and they just want their free sports bra, which is totally fine. So we give them some education about how to take care of their sports bra and why it's beneficial. We give them their fitting and they're on their way. Some athletes don't want to do the sports bra fitting, which is totally, totally cool. And they get a little bit of women's health education. So we really try to meet athletes where they are and where they're comfortable, because it is kind of it's a intimate topic. So we really work hard to try to make sure our athletes are comfortable when we're having those conversations.
I'm really glad to hear you say that, you take your athletes' comfortability and ease, into consideration, because breast and menstrual health can be very feely touchy subjects a lot. Yes. And I know that in my own networks here, and sometimes speaking for myself here, it's not always the easiest topics to be talking about. Maybe as we wrap up, I would absolutely love to hear your advice for our listeners. So what is maybe one piece of advice you would give to either athletes, coaches, or family caregivers to help support the health of women Special Olympic athletes?
Oh, excellent question. Okay, that's a big question too. So some advice I would give would be in terms of coaches and parents or caregivers, listen to your athlete, listen to your family member. A lot of times in the women's health world, sometimes pain can be dismissed because it's easily dismissed. And I think even more so in the IDD community, pain for women is already kind of can be dismissive, but then sometimes I wonder when our female athletes go to talk about their pain during menstruation or their pelvic pain, how often is that being taken seriously? Other advice I would give for coaches, try to make your practices, your community as inviting for female athletes. I find in Special Olympics, our coaches are already so amazing. we don't typically have an issue that way. We have the most amazing volunteers and coaches who really, really embody inclusivity and accessibility. I think once we're able to give them more resources in this space, it'll be extremely helpful. For a lot of male coaches, I think this will be the first time they're, you know, considering some of these things that we've been talking about. So definitely there'll be more to come. The Endometriosis Network of Canada just came out with, it's like an education curriculum for schools to talk about menstruation. And that would be a great resource for caregivers who are wondering how to start a conversation about menstrual health with their family member. So I would take a peek at that and other resources that are available. At some point, we will compile those resources so they're more easily accessible. Also, you can reach out to myself or the health manager for Special Olympics in your area. For Ontario, that's Brock Reisner, who's been doing some incredible work also in the women's health capacity. So him and I and Victoria Formusa, who's the health manager for Special Olympics Canada, have been working on a women's health report to try to advocate for these programs going forward. So definitely reach out to Special Olympics health health partners, and they should have some resources available for you as well.
As a Special Olympic athlete, I really second your earlier comment about Special Olympics being wonderful. Personally, I don't think the sky is big enough for the card that all of us athletes want to write to coaches, volunteers, or even our colleagues and partners from the law enforcement torsion.
Absolutely.
You know, I don't think the sky's going to ever be big enough to write what we really want to write as a thank you to everybody.
Well, and to you too, Melanie, and your fellow athletes. I mean, our volunteers wouldn't be as incredible as they are without our incredible athletes. I learn something new and every single day because of my amazing job and to get to work with amazing athletes like yourself.
Well, thank you so much for your time and for sharing your valuable insights today, Rachel. I really wish we had longer to talk. I was really enjoying the conversation.
Me too.
We were going along. So thank you very much and all the best to you. So hello again, everybody. I am excited to have Catriona LeMay-Doan here with me, a Champions Network athlete and a retired Canadian speed skater and double Olympic champion here with us today.
Hi.
Hello. Before we get going, let's start with a quick introduction and an icebreaker. So, Catriona, please introduce yourself and tell us maybe a fun fact about yourself.
Okay. Well, hello. Thanks for having me on this podcast. So as you mentioned, I am a retired speed skater. I speed skated for 23 years, went to 4 Olympic Games, 5 as media and 2 as mission team. And I was on the National Special Olympics Board for 6 years. A fun fact is, everybody thinks since I did a sport where you go 55 kilometers an hour around on the ice that I'm a daredevil. I don't jump into water if my head's going to go underwater. I don't go up a curb on a mountain bike. I am actually, I'm a scaredy cat in most things, so people don't expect that.
So why do you think it's important to talk about menstrual and breast health in the Special Olympics community?
Well, I'm going to actually start by saying I think it's important that we talk about it in every community. You know, I've been around sport for a long time, over 40 years, and there are things that were never discussed before. And it, when I look back, it really surprises me that we never had any of these conversations, and you sort of hid the conversations, you hid if you had questions, you hid if you were stressed about it. And I think it's important to have those conversations in all areas, and not just all sport, but, you know, in all areas, because that is the life that we live as females. But especially in the Special Olympics community, and sporting world, I think it's super important because we need to support athletes. And we need to make sure that athletes, you know, we talk about the wellness of athletes, and we need to make sure that athletes, they put the time into training and preparation. There's so much education on also, you know, eating well, living well, foot health, dental health, eye health, ear health, all of these things. So we need to talk about women's health. And I think when we don't talk about certain things, it can affect our mental health as well. And so when we normalize the struggles and the questions and sometimes the problems that women have, either with breast health or menstruation health, we're normalizing it because it is something that's normal. And so, you know, I love that we've gotten to this point. I think it's taken us too long. It's 2025. It's taken us too long, but we're there. And I think it's super important because, you know, it's something that women deal with. And let's talk about it and let's help each other, because sometimes somebody's gone through something that somebody else doesn't know. And so it's like, well, let me help you. And this worked for me. Maybe it could work for you as well. So I really love that we're having this conversation.
Something I'm personally noticing is I seem to have more frequent mood swings when I have my period, something that may not have occurred commonly when I first started having my period, but now I'm noticing a lot more mood swings, and thank goodness there's starting to being more meds or more medication that can help you relieve some symptoms of pain, because I sure hear you about the cramps and discomfort women may feel or experience when having their period.
Yeah, I'm gonna, if you're okay, I'm gonna jump in and comment that when I was an athlete, I was really fortunate. So I did not have any mood swings. I did not have any cramps. I had nothing. And my daughter, she does not take after me. So when she started having issues, I was like, what? Well, then I'm going to tell you, when I turned 40, it was a complete change. I will never forget thinking, is this what a cramp is like? This is horrible. And I actually thought, I can't believe teenagers go through this. The other part, which I found even worse, was that, and this was 40 was like literally, and I had heard about this and I just thought, oh, I've never had issues. The moment I turned 40, I was housebound for a day and a half because I couldn't wear enough clothes. I couldn't wear enough products. And it was like, I had to plan meetings. I had to plan driving my kids. And I felt, I mean, it was debilitating in the way that I couldn't live a normal life for those few days. Like, I had to schedule things. Well, it came to be a huge problem when I was in London 2012. So I was working the Olympics, and we were supposed to have a I was hosting, and so I was supposed to go to the studio, and I phoned my producer and I said, I'm not feeling well, because I knew that I couldn't make it to the studio without having five extra changes of clothes. The thing was, is the next year I went to my doctor. So I'd gone through this for 2.5 years. And she said to me, Katrina, why did you deal with this for 2 years? We can help you. But I felt, and it was silly at my age and having a daughter, you know, and realizing that she was maybe going to go through some issues with periods. But she just said, why didn't you come to me before this? And so, you know, that was 12 years ago. And now I'm so thankful that she helped me. But we need to say that it's okay to go for ask for help, whether it's meds, whether it's products, whether it's understanding that if you got a mood swing, how do you deal with that? What's the best way for you? And Melanie, how you deal with it might be differently than how I deal with it or a teammate. And so I think that's what normalizes the conversation. But I was really fortunate as an athlete, but I'll tell you, I had a wake up call and I went, oh my goodness, I can't believe people deal with this every month, because all of a sudden I understood.
A lot of my friends and fellow athletes also face the challenges and obstacles and barriers of having hidden disabilities. So when you're trying to advocate for yourself, that's not always easy.
We just keep kind of going down different avenues. I have a hearing disability, and so a lot of people, when I ask them to speak up, or if I, you know, ask them to repeat things, a lot of people sort of look at me like, you're not listening to me. And it's really difficult, because, you know, I mean, I know we're talking about women's health, but any advertisement on even a hearing disability is often an older generation. And, you know, I think, why aren't we talking about disabilities that we can't see right then and there? And, you know, they affect everybody at all ages.
For sure, for sure. And regardless of what we're talking about, I feel hidden disabilities should be included in women's health, or in everybody's
exactly.
health. I really feel like that. I really do.
Yeah.
So proceeding along, women may experience period-related symptoms like cramps, tiredness, or mood changes. What are maybe some strategies that worked for you when you experienced these symptoms before or during your sport? And what are some tips or advice that you would have for Special Olympic athletes?
Well, and I think, thanks for the question. I think kind of going on what we were just talking about, it's the fact of having people to talk to, because, you know, I was fortunate when I was competing, though I remember the first time when I did get my period, I'm in speed skating. And when I was young, I mean, I did short track and long track. So this is a true story. I got my period and I was doing a short track meet. Well, what they do in the corners is they put water down. And I remember thinking, I can't wear a pad and go and race, because if I fall, like, I can't do this. And I just instantly was like, okay. And I remember going to a store, not knowing what to buy. And I'm the youngest of three girls, but it was just something that even in our house, we didn't really talk about. And so that was a really kind of scary experience. But then, you know, the biggest thing is that people have somebody to talk to. And I'm not saying I didn't have somebody to talk to, but I was embarrassed. And so I think the more we have a conversation, and normalize everything. Just normalize that women will get a period, and that, oh, you might have cramps. Okay, well, you know, who can you talk to about that? And then who can help you, whether it's you or somebody that you trust, can help you talk to a medical professional? Because what is right for you? Is it the fact that, you know, that you take you know, an over-the-counter med, or whether it, do you need a prescription? Do you need to talk to somebody? Like, what is it? Because when we have those barriers, and whatever the barrier might be, it does lead to a possible deterioration of mental health. because that stress can weigh on us. And then we feel like everybody's watching us. And I'm saying this from, I know it different times, people are watching us. And then we feel self-conscious. And then we feel like we're doing something wrong. And it's just over and over and over. And so that mental health side, I think, is really important to talk about, which goes along with that women's health. Because again, if we get mood swings, if we get anxiety, if we get depression, and normalizing that we might not feel our very best.
So breast health, including proper bra support, is obviously another key part of women's health. What advice do you have for women in Special Olympics on the importance of wearing a proper fitting bra?
Ooh, that's a difficult one, because I don't know if I actually know if everybody wears a proper fitting bra. I went for a bra fitting once, but that was a number of years ago. And since then, with my age, going through menopause, I've, you know, gained some weight. And so I think that's the biggest thing is, and the cost. The cost is a huge barrier as well. So again, I think it's always okay to talk to people, talk to a medical professional if you can, and then ask about, you know, possible subsidies or what you can. But it's important that it comes back a lot of it to, again, how we confidence. We're all built differently and there's no right or wrong. But I think it's super important that we just, again, accept as well as we can, accept ourselves, accept others as well. That's one of the biggest things. That's part of the mental health side. But then have these conversations. And if there are some problems, especially when you're doing sport and you're not comfortable, talk. There are people and resources. Let's have the conversation. Let's find people who can help get an athlete to be comfortable.
So do you have any thoughts or ideas on how coaches and or family caregivers can help to create and support a comfortable environment for talking about women's health topics?
Well, I think exactly this is showing them the podcasts that are being done. You know, I think the more we can have conversations, and sometimes even in family situations, it's easier if it's not one-on-one. So maybe we have more group settings, more group meetings about having open conversations. And it doesn't just mean that it's female coaches, because male coaches deal with female athletes as well. So how does if a male coach is dealing with an athlete who's having an issue, how does he not solve it necessarily, but what does he say? What sort of resources can he and or she rely on? So I think, you know, we need to have more webinars. We need to have more links to resources. We may need to have more basic conversations, because what you realize is there's not one fit for every person. And I mean, kind of what I said, it's, you know, I didn't know what this was like until I was 40. So I couldn't actually relate. I heard about everybody having, you know, struggles, but I didn't understand it. And then all of a sudden I went, wow, now I get it. But for those, you know, people who haven't had any mood swings or any issues, or male coaches, what are the resources? So let's continue these conversations. Let's normalize it, because guess what? It is normal.
So then, as we wrap up, I would absolutely love to hear your advice for our listeners. What is maybe one piece of advice you would give to fellow athletes, coaches, or family caregivers to help support the health of women in sports?
So I guess two things. Let's talk. Let's normalize everything, because everything is normal. There isn't, you know, we talk about there's not one size fits all. Everything is normal. Everything that's abnormal is normal, because we think that we're unique. You know, it's like, oh, I don't know if anybody else deals with this. Everybody deals with that. So let's normalize that. And let's continue to share resources. So whether it's websites, whether it's, you know, numbers that people can phone, whether it's coaches who, you know, are better at talking to that. Let's share resources so that we can normalize this and have the conversation, because it's not a taboo subject.
Well, I really want to take the time to thank you so much, Catriona, for sharing your valuable thoughts and insights today. It's been a real pleasure to have you on the show. We've learned so much from your thoughts and your experiences. So thank you again for your time today. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Melanie. Thanks for sharing your story. And thank you so much for being a voice and in that leadership position.
This Special Olympics edition of the podcast has been made possible through support from Special Olympics Canada and the Azrieli Adult Neurodevelopmental Center at the Center for Addiction and Mental Health in Toronto, Canada.